When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
And welcome to another podcast. It's LiesOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at MTI, Madison Firefighters Local 311, and Madison Teamsters Local 695. Joining us now, the Mayor of Madison, Paul Soglin. Election Day is April 2nd. Mayor, thanks for coming on the show.
Sure enough.
Let's talk about the metrics that everyone should look at when they look at who should be the next mayor and whether you should be rehired. The economy, the growth, city services, whether we're moving in a way that we're equipped to deal with the future. How do you think Madison measures up?
Well, the data is clearly very good in terms of the improvements we've made in the last 8 years. I'll be blunt. I'm not sure a lot of people really care about that right now. But, you know, the bottom line is African-American unemployment was at close to 27% when I took office, worse than the state, worse than the nation. And here we are with data 6 years later. The latest we have is 2017. African-American unemployment has dropped to 7%. The disparity to white has significantly shrunk. And we are doing better than the rest of the nation and the state. Children in households below the poverty line. When I came into office, that was two-thirds of African-American kids, and now it's one-third. And we could go on with other data. Households' incomes up about $13,000. And, of course, the economy in terms of construction, jobs, and the all-important factor of this new commercial construction shifting tax burdens away from single-family homeowners as opposed to, to the commercial property. That's a big deal. And the other thing is, this is just incredible, Madison's equalized property value is now greater than Milwaukee's.
And what does that mean? Put that in English.
Well, what it means is you got a city that used to be, you know, what, 600,000-700,000 in population, the largest city in the state. It still is the largest city in the state. Its population is still twice Madison's population. The value of all property there should be twice our value.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's almost $500 million less. And keep in mind, when we talk about the value of all that property, we're not including any of the state or the university properties because they're off the tax rolls.
I was thinking the other day, putting this into some perspective, as you became mayor in 2011, Madison and Dane County had a huge economic hit because of Act 10. So, and that was something you had no control over. You were in the streets with me fighting that terrible legislation, but that was a thing you had no control over. So that was a huge hit that you had to overcome.
We not only had to deal with the results of the Great Recession, but unlike most cities in the United States, yes, we took this enormous hit to our economy because of what Scott Walker did, which principally was designed to decommission state government and our great university.
And because a lot of people that are interested in labor listen to these podcasts, I had somebody ask me, well, what has Paul Soglin done for workers? What has he done to mitigate the damage to workers, and how has he fought for workers' rights in the construct and the world we're living in now?
Well, first, let's talk about what our impact is on the private sector, as well as the city. So I set us on a three-year plan, and we'll be, at the end of this year, every city employee will be making a minimum of $15 an hour. When we negotiated our first job TIF last year, we said all entry-level, all jobs have to start at $15 an hour with health insurance, with a pension. And what that does is not just affect the employees who are subject to these agreements, but what it also does is set the bar for others in the private sector. That's the first thing. In terms of all of our city employees who were adversely hurt by Walker and Act 10, we did two things. First, we basically restructured benefits and wages in a way that minimized that and made sure that every city employee was equitably treated, because Act 10 didn't treat each group of workers the same. And Madison public employees, you go back since Act 10, are better off than any group of public employees at any level of government here in the state of Wisconsin. I'm talking cities, counties, the state, the university, school districts. You take where these employees were 7 years ago with the consequences of Act 10 and where they are now, Madison public employees are doing the best. Hands down, nothing else to discuss. Secondly, there were the question of workers' rights. And what we did is we adopted by ordinance an employee handbook which codified workers' rights. So it meant in the workplace, all the rules in terms of discharge, in terms of discipline, in terms of making sure that whistleblowers couldn't get hurt, all of that was codified, and we led the way in that regard. Eventually, the county and the city followed us. There might be some other governments in the state, but we set the bar, and we have done the best.
They didn't stop. The Republicans didn't stop at going after workers with Act 10. Scott Walker lied, then went after, did right to work. Then they went after project labor agreements, which are crucial in getting union neutrality and companies not fighting workers as they try to organize. What can the city do to battle some of these other things that they've done?
That is really tough. Because under state law, without the project labor agreements and without the guaranteed labor standard wages, the best we can do is use our bully pulpit and get and persuade our contractors, not by law, but by handshakes, that they should be paying prevailing wage, they should be using union labor, and we've been pretty effective at doing that. You look at the city municipal building, the old post office, that's a 20-some million dollar project, and we saw that happen there.
Your vision for the city, you've been mayor several different times, and yet if I know you, you're looking at what Madison will be like when we're all dead. Your vision for Madison 50 years from now, what things have you put in place, and what would you like to do if you have another 4 years?
Well, what I think is critical, and looking out 50 years, the most important thing that we can do, especially with the shrinking of the public sector, but also because of the challenges in terms of disparity, is the entrepreneurship that I announced on the entrepreneurship program that I announced on Wednesday. That to me is really critical in terms of focusing our resources and using our power of persuasion with the banks and the credit unions to fund entrepreneurship, to fund small businesses for women, minorities, veterans, and immigrants. And if we do that, and we close that enormous gap, we're going to close a lot of other gaps as well. We're going to not only close the income gap and the academic success gap with that, but we're also going to close the home ownership gap, and it's going to make, as it said, a more welcoming city.
So when the city tore down, obviously, the Greenbush neighborhood and took down a lot of minority-owned small businesses.
Yes.
That wasn't thinking ahead, was it?
When that was done, that's the awful response. Who knew? when the Greenbush, the triangle, was destroyed, no one at the time understood the consequences of not displacement, but destruction of all of those African-American-owned businesses. And Dr. Richard Harris, in his book, Growing Up Black in South Madison, really nails it. And that didn't happen just in Madison. It happened in Chicago when they ran the expressways through critical neighborhoods. It happened in California.
It happened in Milwaukee.
Here, and certainly Milwaukee.
So when Sacha Rhodes Conway was asked whether Madison is a racist city, she said yes, and the United States is a racist country. What's your response to that?
Well, you know, the legacy of this nation, and you got to remember, we've had slavery here in North America a longer time, hundreds of years, longer than since the end of slavery in the 1860s. So, yeah, we've got a legacy of racism and slavery. But when I go around and I spend time with the people of this city in small groups or large gatherings, I don't see racist people. I see people working very hard and struggling to make the right decisions and to deal with this challenge of equity. I see people with great hearts and intent on doing the right thing. However, we do have legacies, and we've changed them. For example, my administration did what's called Ban the Box, which is eliminating that box you have to check if you've been you got a felony arrest. We've done a more assertive affirmative action program. We've contracted with Big Step to get a more diverse working force into the building trades. I mean, there's just dozens of things that we have done institutionally to make a difference. But please, when I see the folks we work with making these changes and embracing them, how can you possibly call them racist? That's outrageous.
Yeah, we've seen over the years Republicans try to quantify Madison as a label. And I just think it's so irresponsible to quantify Madison as any one thing or use shorthand to name call 250,000 people. It's not accurate, and it doesn't seem to serve any purpose other than, I guess, making the person that said it feel good.
Well, it in this day of identity politics, maybe there's some appeal to it. But I know one thing. You keep making statements like that, just as you make racist statements, people start believing it and acting upon it accordingly.
Well, that was going to be my... Go ahead.
And that leads to really bad consequences. I was talking to an employer here, CEO of a company that employs over 600 people. And they said, we are desperately trying to get as diverse a workforce as possible, and we're recruiting all over the country. And they're disturbed, and as the CEO put it to me, first, we're not a racist city, and secondly, it makes it difficult for us to have a successful recruitment.
Well, I follow politics pretty closely, have for a very long time. I looked to see if I could find another example of a mayoral candidate using that sort of shorthand and blanket a statement about the community they were running to lead, and I can't find one, Paul. I've heard other candidates identify institutional racism within their cities and talk about it in a nuanced way, but I can't find another example of it. And I would think it would be something that would be hard. Your job, right, is to recruit people to come to Madison. You're an ambassador as well as anything. You travel all over the United States for stuff. You don't disparage the city with that sort of shorthand when you're trying to get people to come here.
Yeah, and there's another aspect to it, and here's what it is. That it makes it, as I was saying about the private sector trying to recruit, it takes us off target in terms of finding the solutions. I remember what Adlai Stevenson said about Eleanor Roosevelt. She'd rather light a candle than curse the darkness. And, you know, we rolled out this equity business program on Wednesday. We've shown that there's things we can do, that there is programmatic change that we can embrace successfully. And one of the things that Satya said, because she got burned on this statement, and she said we're racist, she said, well, white people shouldn't be making that judgment. That tells me another difference between her and me. And that is our life experiences in living and being part of and working with the African-American community. My experience tells me I am comfortable making that statement, that when I meet with and speak with my African-American friends and peers and business associates and people in government, yeah, they say to me exactly what I've reiterated. There is institutional racism. There's changes we have to make. But this isn't a racist city.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Be right back with Mayor Paul Soglin at SlysOffice.com.
Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, we love guitars.
We're back with Madison Mayor Paul Soglin at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by Madison Computer Works. I want to talk to you about some of the things that Satya is pushing for that you're probably already addressing, and one of them is rapid transit. Explain rapid transit and why that's the be-all, end-all.
All right. She consistently made a statement, which I don't know where she pulled it out of. She said, well, we've been talking about bus rapid transit for 30 years. That is just nonsense. That is absolutely false. The first real discussion about bus rapid transit, other than what might have happened in some bar at 2 in the morning, was when the Metropolitan Planning Organization took up a small study around 2011, came back with a report. And the report, in my judgment, was very sound. And it said, it implied, you know, that what we already knew, which is we can't afford rail. But the critical thing was, if we want to expand bus transit, we want to expand public transportation in the metro area, the concept of bus rapid transit is where we go. Bus rapid transit basically takes the idea and the flow and the size of rail, but puts it on wheels. So in other words, you would have a station stop, just like you do with a train, with a seamless step from the platform into the bus. You would have guideways and right-of-ways where the bus would have preference over automobiles. You would have no blockage of a queuing line in terms of buying a ticket on a conventional bus. Everybody just walks on in. And to make it, and the buses would be longer and bigger. And, of course, our goal is to make it an all-electric fleet. So she was on the council from 2007 till 2011, two more years after that as well, and did absolutely nothing about bus rapid transit. We took that Metropolitan Planning Organization report, and we have gone through a series of steps over the last 7 years and said, let's get public input, let's design the routes, let's design the system, let's interface with the public again. We've got Madison in motion and several other efforts. And I said to the staff as we designed and rolled this out, we do not know how we are going to fund this, which is going to cost in the hundreds of millions of dollars. But I don't want the day to come where we have the funding and we're not prepared. So your job is to keep on with the planning, keep on with the design. We will plug along working on the funding, and the day will come when we've got the funding and we're ready to go. That's the reality of this. She's making me sound like I'm a skeptic and don't believe in it, because she's out there saying, and we will fund it. We don't need federal funds. We don't need to wait on the state for the authority of a regional transit authority. And I keep saying, okay, where the hell are you getting the $200 million? Where's the money coming from? Where's the beef? And we're not getting any answers.
Let's talk about the flooding in the city last year. I've heard accusations that you didn't do enough in the during the flooding, and that you haven't done enough to basically have a Green New Deal for Madison or plan for global warming. Your response to that?
All right. So we'd already invested. Let me give you the sequence timing. The capital budget was prepared and introduced. The flooding comes. And then before the budget's adopted, I introduced about $5 million of amendments to further address the flooding. So let's take this up step by step. When we prepared the 2019 budget, we already knew we had challenges in the Gammon Road area. We finished two-thirds of the reconstruction of the sewage and drainage system for University Avenue. The final steps of that were in there, and several other smaller projects were all in that budget. When that record rain came and we got that 10-inch deluge that basically sat over the west side for so long, we discovered new areas that were covered by the flooding. So consequently, the engineers sat down, I worked with them, and that's the additional $5 million, which is some changes. We identified a culvert that had been reconstructed years ago, and it was too small. It had been shrunk, and we're going back in there. We're going to open that up, and that's going to stop some flooding off of Midvale Boulevard. And then there's some other long-range things we have to do. We have to make some decisions about how to drain some of the water that comes down into the basin that is University Avenue. And we have to do some additional work, which is outside of our purview, with the county, because a lot of the isthmus flooding and the flooding on the southern shores of Lake Monona is a result of blockage downstream, which is not in the city of Madison. It's in the county's purview. The county controls the lakes. And that's the business about the weed harvesting. That's the business about the dredging. And I don't think we can escape a discussion about changing the railroad trestle. That's another issue we've got. There's some other things that could be done. Yes, we could do rain gardens at an extraordinary expense. But I'll be blunt. You know, rain gardens don't help unless it's rain that's under an inch and a half or so. And the kinds of rains that you get over 3-4 inches, rain gardens don't do any good. And then when you look at the cost of the investment in them for the return, there's so much more that could be done effectively with that money.
Let's talk about the future of the city as far as using energy and how it fits in with climate change. Well, she said the city hasn't been doing enough.
You know, and that's what every one of my opponents have been saying from the very beginning. Whatever I do, it's not enough. That's because they can't criticize what we've done. And the fact is, we are perhaps the best city in the United States. We have work to do. We're not perfect. And we've taken on the challenges of equity and diversity, the disparate issues in academic and other areas. But, you know, it's real easy to chatter away and talk and talk and talk without performing. So what have we done? Well, that new fire station we just opened is part of a consistent city policy of using renewable energy with all that solar that we've got there and getting us away from a carbon-based fuel. Same thing in terms of the work we did on the refurbishing of the municipal building. It's true in terms of going to an all-electric bus fleet. It's true in terms of the next generation of police vehicles are going to be hybrids. And everywhere we go, we're doing it in terms of city use of energy, and we are encouraging the same in the private sector. The reality is this. If utility companies are burning coal to produce electricity, your all-electric vehicle really is not all that green. What it means is we need leadership working with the utility companies to get them off of coal, off of carbon-based fuels. And that's one of the things our administration's working on. I mean, I'd say to Sasha, okay, you say it's not enough. If you'd been mayor the last 8 years, what would you have done beyond what we did? Because when Donald Trump came into office 2 years ago and abandoned the Paris Accords, I stepped up, and City of Madison was one of the first cities in the country to reaffirm the Paris Accords and said, even if the president doesn't do it, we are. There's now almost 400 cities in the U.S. who've banded together for this goal of preserving our planet.
In summation here, you know, people always talk about they want change. Sometimes for change's sake, they want change. Are you pretty confident that in each term you've served as mayor, you've been looking down the road and looking at ways to do things differently?
If you look at what we've done in regards to innovation in regards to approach to school kids, innovation in regards to technology with Starting Block, on and on, I've probably been the most innovative mayor in the country. And the point is this, age has nothing to do with it. Having been in office has nothing to do with it. And change itself is not what I'm after. What I'm after is improvement and making things better. I'm a very hands-on mayor. I sometimes get criticized for all the travel I do. But as a result of that travel, that's where I learn and see firsthand what other cities are doing. And as I've told Satya about her own Mayor's Innovation Project, when I do go to their sessions, 80-90% of the agenda. Years earlier, I saw it, we did it, we're way ahead of what you're doing in your office.
Madison Mayor Paul Soglin, I strongly support you, and you richly deserve another 4 years. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today.
Thanks, Sly.
All right.
Look forward to it again.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Mayor.
Sly's Office.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.